We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
And wake up, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely doesn't. I was just sort of melting down. This isn't in today's show. It'll be in tomorrow's show. I just can't get over it. Jake Tapper has a new book out, and he can't detailing Biden's mental decline and how it was covered up by the Biden administration. That is absolute garbage. Like, you guys knew about this.
How did we know about it?
We reported on it. Yeah. You, Jake Tapper at CNN, didn't know about it, and you're now pretending that it was just the Biden administration that covered it up. Anyway.
Talk about gaslighting. The American public knew about it.
They are
giving themselves White House press awards for this. It's
I know.
Crazy to watch.
It was top of mind that we're not talking about it in today's show. We're going to talk about it more deeply in tomorrow's show because I'm flabbergasted by it. Now he's trying to make money off of this with a new book. Give me a break. Anyway,
I loathe the media. I loathe them.
Loathe them too. No one watches CNN. Give me a break. Anyway, but on today's show, President Trump in Saudi Arabia. I mean, talk about, I think Natalie and I were watching it, one of the greatest speeches that Trump has ever given, and neocons and warmongers are melting down. I'm talking like Ben Shapiro, you know, Mark Levin. They're all like melting down right now that President Trump wants to put America first and stop being an interventionist in the rest of the world. We're going to talk about that. And what does that mean for Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, who is also furious because he's going full bore, full steam ahead with a war in Gaza? And there seems to be a big clash coming right now. So we're going to look at all of that on the show.
We're also going to talk to a free speech representative from FIRE. First time we're speaking to someone from that organization. And I am excited because this is an organization I respect a lot. Do we really have to defend Harvard and their free speech, their academic freedom? I know you hate Harvard. I hate Harvard. In fact, FIRE hates Harvard, but they are fighting for their academic freedom. And so we're going to have to get behind this, guys, whether we like it or not. We're doing that.
All right. We're going to talk about that. Plus the economy in today's show. You know, is the U.S. dollar still in free fall, in collapse mode? And what is President Trump's plan for that? Move us to a gold standard, perhaps. We'll look at all of that and more. But first, family farms. Family farms are fighting back right now with the help of our friends over at Moink. A handful of corporations, just four to be exact, control over 80% of the U.S. meat supply. Even more alarming, the largest share of U.S. pork is now under Chinese ownership. These multinational giants have been accused of using strong-arm tactics that are crushing small American farms. On top of that, with over 10,000 additives in our food, 80% of U.S. antibiotics being fed to livestock, many Americans are left eating what critics are calling sketchy meat. But one company is pushing back, our friends over at Moink. They are standing up for American family farms and real food. Their model is very, very simple. Meat from animals raised outdoors, the way nature intended it, by farmers who are actually paid fairly and treated with respect. Everything is born, raised, and harvested right here in the United States and shipped directly to your door with honest prices. As someone who cares deeply about where my food comes from, I can tell you that Moink's food is absolutely delicious. Their bacon, their chicken thighs, their steaks are fantastic, and they're helping to save rural America one box at a time. Right now, go to moinkbox.com/redacted to join the Moink movement. Get free wings for life when you sign up. That's right. Free wings for life. Seriously, the best wings you'll ever taste. I know David's been addicted to them lately, and he's been ordering them like crazy. Right for a limited time. Go to moinkbox.com/redacted. That's moinkbox.com/redacted. All right, let's talk about Saudi Arabia because, boy, there's a lot of moving pieces with this story today. First, we'll kind of break them down in chunks here because President Trump is in the Middle East meeting first in Saudi Arabia, where he secured nearly $600 billion in U.S. investment deals. Here he is signing these documents with MBS right there. Saudi companies investing in the United States, $600 billion worth of this. Here's just a list. I'm not going to go through all of them, but just take a look at this. These are plans to invest in AI data centers, AMD, Uber, Oracle, Google, Salesforce, all using are committing to invest $80 billion in both countries now. You have the list is long there, Boeing and et cetera, et cetera. Trump also lit a freaking fire and totally torched all of these neocons and interventionists that want the U.S. to bomb Iran, including Netanyahu, who is his hair is on fire today because he wants to move fully into Gaza. So his speech on sort of anti-interventionism and anti-neocons was pretty telling today.
It was jaw-dropping. So we're going to show you our favorite clips because while Trump talks about respecting the Arab culture, allowing Arabic countries to make their own decisions, being friends with them, not telling them how to be, not trying to save the world, not judging them, Netanyahu's in the backyard starting a fire and mad as snakes about this. So Trump basically said that this is a totally new diplomatic approach for the United States. To my mind, this is huge. Here he says we want to do business, but we don't want to wage wars. We don't want to tell you how to be. We don't want to tell you how to build your societies. Besides, we've been kind of shit at that anyway. We don't do a good job. We don't understand how you should live. We barely understand how we should live. We're done, but we're open for business. Watch.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. What a great place. What a great place, but more importantly, what great people. I want to thank His Royal Highness, the Crown Prince, for...
Okay, this is not actually the clip that I wanted, so we can move forward. That was his warm welcome. Watch the next one where he says what I just said is, we're friends to everybody, business partners to everybody, judges of nobody. Watch this.
In recent years, far too many American presidents have been afflicted with the notion that it's our job to look into the souls of foreign leaders and use U.S. policy to dispense justice for their sins. They loved using our very powerful military, and now it's really the most powerful it's ever been. We just are getting a budget approved, $1 trillion, highest budget we've ever had in history for military, $1 trillion. And we're getting the greatest missiles, the greatest weapons. And, you know, I hate to do it, but you have to do it because we believe in peace through strength. You have to have the strength. Otherwise, bad things could happen. But hopefully, we'll never have to use any of those weapons. Seems to be an awfully big waste of money if you're never going to use them. But hopefully, we'll never have to use them because the destructive power of some of those weapons are like nobody's seen before. I believe it is God's job to sit in judgment, my job to defend America and to promote the fundamental interest of stability, prosperity, and peace. That's what I really want to do.
Okay. So he said it's God's job to judge other leaders. We're not here to do this. And in the clip that I had intended to show you, he also says that the so-called nation builder wreckers for more nations, basically we've gone abroad, told other countries, oh, you need to be better with women's rights or gay rights or democracy or diplomacy or anything like that. We go, and if they don't do it, we put pressure on them, we push sanctions on them, and we decide to start bombing. We're done with that. He says peace, prosperity, and progress ultimately come not from a radical rejection of your heritage. We want you to just go ahead and be Arabic, and we will respect that, basically. This is huge. This is not how any president has ever spoken before. The State Department has a whole litany of press releases talking about how we disapprove of other cultures, and we're going to go over there and do something about it. It's not got us anywhere, right?
That's right. We want to bring in Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis now to discuss all of this. He's the host of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive Show on YouTube and a lot of things to unpack. Colonel, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, appreciate your invite here. Glad to be here.
Our pleasure. You know, first, at just a high level, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, it seems like he is sort of scrambling right now. So, I don't know. There's a lot to unpack with what's going on in Israel. He's, over the past 24 hours, basically saying we're going full bore with our mission, our war in Gaza, doubling down on this position, while at the same time, President Trump is in Saudi Arabia took a few pot shots, basically, at Netanyahu, the way that I read it. Unless I'm missing something here. And it seems that there's a lot of neocons in Washington, D.C. crying right now. What do you make of this?
Well, I was cheering when I heard that. And I saw that clip that you were trying to show there a second ago. And I had to back the video up a little bit to like, did I just hear that right? Because I agree with you that I'm like, when have I ever heard an American president saying these things? I've been saying these things for a long time and wanting an American president to say them. Now, I will caveat by saying that your words are great, but they have to be followed with action, too. But, man, if he does any version of that, it could represent a sea change of positive for the United States, because what he said is so rational and logical. And that's what other people around the world want to hear, so that they can have better relations with us and more safety and security and more economic prosperity for us. So if he follows through with actions, that is fantastic.
Right. So, you know, I'm watching these relations with Saudi Arabia. We've had all of these reports of Saudi Arabia, the MBS and his family and things that they've done. And I thought, wait, we're not supposed to like them, but can we be diplomatic? But it has to be across the board, is that we don't tell people how to be, and we can do business with people if it, in fact, benefits both sides. And non-interventionist has to be absolute. So I can't then go digging into MBS and say, well, what am I supposed to think of that, right? You have to be a person of your word.
Well, look, I mean, it's a messy world that we live in. And, yeah. and you can't turn a blind eye and pretend nothing has happened. Or, I mean, sometimes you do have to take some actions. But ultimately, the president of the United States, whoever holds that office, has the primary obligation to keep us safe and to ensure our economic prosperity. And sometimes that means doing business with folks you don't like. And it also means that you can use your influence to guide them in areas where you do want them to go, especially if that's mutually beneficial. And if it's away from those things that he's been accused of in the past, that's a bigger win than trying to just condemn it. And listen, sometimes condemning is what you have to do, but only in certain selections if it has a chance for a positive outcome. But especially what he was talking about with the war, he's talking about maybe lifting sanctions on Syria, or actually he did, because he wants to give them a chance. He doesn't want to go to war with Iran. He still says they can't have nuclear weapons, but he says he would much prefer diplomacy. I think there's a real shot at that. And listen, this whole thing about Netanyahu, he may want to go full bore on here, but he's got to be careful he doesn't go too far away from Trump, because he can't do any of that without this flow of American weapons, bombs, missiles, and everything else. So we have a lot of leverage over there. And Netanyahu, I think that he's going down a path that cannot succeed militarily and will harm Israel. And I hope that Trump comes to that same conclusion. But overall, I really like the direction this is going, especially the neocons crying, as you mentioned. That was great, too.
I know. I'm pinching myself because I really... I don't want to get my hopes up in this situation. Like, is Netanyahu being boxed out? Trump, was furious that Netanyahu went around his back on a number of different issues. He doesn't like being upstaged. He doesn't like being, waking up and finding at 4 a.m. that Netanyahu has released a video message putting words in Trump's mouth. And you've seen the marginalization now of Mike Waltz within the Trump administration being pushed out in a lot of ways. So I don't want to get my hopes up too high here. Do you anticipate the United States really pulling back away from Netanyahu even more than we've already seen in the past 48 hours?
I certainly hope so. Not out of any animosity towards Israel. I have nothing but good thoughts toward the people of Israel, but because it's not effective policy. It's not good for Israel. It's definitely not good for us. I mean, some of the things Israel doing, if you're going to be honest, they're clearly against international law. And all you have to do is just look at any of these images of people being starved. And listen, I'll pull one issue out. The fact that Israel is openly blocking all food to the entire population there is an absolute black and white against international law. You are giving corporate punishment to the 2 million people in the Gaza Strip, allegedly to put pressure on Hamas. That is illegal, and we should not support that. And I hope that Trump says that's not good for us. That's not good for our image to actually support that. So we're going to pull that back, and then that will force Netanyahu to have some policies that he can afford to do that may be better for that. But at any rate, we don't want to be associated with something that is so heinous as starving kids to death.
Right. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu says, here's a quote, "There is no way that Israel will lay off Gaza, even if they get their hostages back." So he has at least dropped the veil that we're doing this to retrieve the hostages. He's saying, even if we get the hostages, we're going to keep going. He says, we'll take them and then we'll go in. There's no way we'll stop the war, he's saying. We can make a ceasefire for a certain period of time, but we're going to the end. Now, that's the attitude they're taking to ceasefire talks in Qatar. Well, the Trump administration obviously has to do something about that. They can't allow a 30-day ceasefire and then go back in and completely raise the area. What do you make of this attitude going into negotiations? That's not a settlement.
It's not. And I think that this is coming closer. I think that the cockiness and the arrogance, after a while, you don't even worry about pretending because you've pretended on so thin of a lie in the past and it seems to work. Maybe they're just not worried about that anymore. But I've been saying since at least the first month of this war, way back into 2023, that if the Israelis wanted the hostages back, they could have had them back. There was a deal to be made. There was something on the table. If it was important to you, you would have prioritized that above everything else. They were still inside the Gaza Strip. They weren't going anywhere, but he has chosen not to. And of course, this last ceasefire, there was a golden opportunity. They would have had them all back by now if they had done all three phases of that. But Israel is the one that closed that back off. So actions speak much louder than words. And again, I hope that this influences President Trump's decision to not back failing policies.
Yeah, Netanyahu, clearly, you're absolutely right about that, Colonel, which is we've had multiple reports from different journalists, Jewish journalists right here on our show, who've said absolutely that Netanyahu does not want the hostages back. Once that happens, the war ends, and then Netanyahu is out of power. And that's why you had so many protests from families of the hostages protesting Netanyahu in the streets of Tel Aviv. So if they wanted these hostages back, they could have gotten them. And I also thought it was interesting that the hostage who President Trump was able to negotiate, Steve Witkoff, to get out of there, he was asked to meet with Netanyahu, and he said, no, I don't want to meet with Netanyahu, because he knows.
I didn't see that part.
You know, he kept him there. I mean, by all accounts, Netanyahu was instrumental in perpetuating his hostage keeping. So, again, this has been a disaster of their own making. It's going to be interesting to see going forward how much this can continue inside of Gaza. I'll just get you out of here on this, Colonel, which is, are you surprised by like the neocon meltdown? I mean, you have like Ben Shapiro coming out basically in many ways slamming the Trump administration for this hostage negotiation by not using Israel to carry it out. They're like upset that we got an American hostage back.
Well, yeah, and you've also seen Mark Levin. He's just been melting down over a number of things. He's been upset with Trump. Somebody who just a couple of weeks ago was really excited because Trump put him on some board member of something, and he was all excited. Now all of a sudden he's going against it because Trump is doing what he's actually campaigned on, which is America first. That's what the American president is supposed to do, is to prioritize our needs above any other nation. And now people, it just shows that some people actually don't want an America first foreign policy. They want an Israel first foreign policy and then America if it works out. And I'm categorically against that. And again, I just want to reinforce, I'm absolutely not opposed to the people of Israel at all. I have nothing but good things about them. I want peace for all of them and for the Palestinian people. But priority comes to the American people from our president.
Right. Clayton said he had one more question, but I do too. When President Trump had strong words for Iran, he talked about how if he can't make a deal with Iran, he's ready to put maximum force economically. He did not make military threats. I mean, maybe a little, you could parse some out at the end. But to my mind, I heard, wait, he's actually not threatening war. He's threatening economic war. Now, we've already had sanctions with Iran in place for a long time. But do you hear hesitancy to go to war with Iran in those words? Because that's what I was hopeful for.
Yes, I actually covered that on my show earlier this afternoon, because when you saw some clips from, especially from late February and early March, Trump was basically said, hey, if there's not a deal, bombs are going to start falling. And we're in the last moment, folks. You know, we're right to the edge here of doing something. And there was something happened behind the scenes, and I'm trying to figure this out. But something really changed in Trump. And then he started switching to, actually, let's go down the diplomatic path. And I was the same with you. I was listening carefully when he said that about Iran, and I noticed that the first thing he said was not there will be bombing. He just said maximum economic pressure, et cetera. And I agree that you could read, but there's some parsing later on that it could imply that. But I think it's clearly he's laying out that his strong imperative, plus other comments he made during this speech, is that he does not want any war in this area. I don't think that Saudi Arabians want any war. And if he wants all these good deals in there, the last thing you want is to have a war in the region. So if I think these right. economic priorities are downplaying any kind of military priorities. So that's a good
thing. Yeah, he's a business.
Yeah,
he's a businessman at heart, you know. So, and I think maybe the right people have gotten to Trump. You know, we were hopeful that some of these neocons would be edged out. And it sounds like the right conversations, the pro-peace groups, are surrounding Trump and maybe blanketing him, maybe protecting him from some of these neocons. That's the way that I'm seeing it right now. But Colonel
Davis, we can give him a little credit directly. This is along the lines of things he promised on the campaign trail.
Yeah. I think that one of the problems in the first administration was that he had the right ideas and other people were working against it. So by surrounding yourself with people who don't work against him, more of his good ideas come out. And I'm for that.
Yeah. Like J.D. Vance, et cetera. So, Colonel, great to see you as always. Thank you so much for your insights on this. And we'll be watching. This is just the first leg of the Mideast trip here. A lot more news will be coming out of the Middle East in the next few days. Colonel, great to see you.
You bet. Appreciate it.
All right, coming up here on the show, we're going to talk about all of those children, the illegal immigration in the United States, and why there's been such an effort to stop the finding of these children. Turns out, guess who's behind it? George Soros and the NGOs have been working overtime to try to keep us from finding those children. Is that a shock to any of you? We have an HHS whistleblower. Tara Rodas is going to be joining us. She told the Biden administration, she told Congress what was happening inside the Department of Homeland Security, and they ignored her. And all these children were sold off into sex slavery. She's going to be joining us in moments. But first, you know, how many of you have ever tried to do a fast before? You know, a multi-day fast? You know how tough it is, right? The headaches, the cravings, the constant inner debate over whether to cave and grab a snack. But you also know what a game changer it can be when you actually push through it and do it, because it's transformative for your body. You feel lighter, you're more energized, your body just hit the reset button. I mean, people talk about all sorts of reversing of different diseases, chronic diseases, and inflammation in the body. That's why I was so excited when I discovered Prolon, when their five-day fasting mimicking diet that gives you the same benefits of a full fast without having to actually go without food. And now they've taken it to the next level with their Prolon Next Gen. It's cleaner, more convenient, more flavorful than ever. You get soups, snacks, and drinks, and they're all plant-based, designed to keep your body in a fasting state while nourishing you at the same time. It's based on decades of research at USC and their Longevity Institute, and the benefits are real. Cellular rejuvenation, fat loss, more energy, even support for skin and metabolic health. I'm telling you, I just got their five-day program, and I'm ready to dive into this. I just showed Natalie, it just arrived, and I'm ready to give it a shot. They have their new upgraded version right now, and I'm all in. Everything is ready to go. It's clearly labeled for the 5 days that you're going to do it. Includes everything, 100% organic soups and teas. So if you've been craving a real reset, this is it. Get ready for summer, folks. Go to prolonlife.com/redacted. Use the code redacted to get 15% off site-wide, plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe to their 5-day program. That's Prolon, P-R-O-L-O-N, life.com/redacted. Give your body the reset it deserves. You will feel the difference.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothes. clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
All right. Well, the Trump administration says it will cut $450 million in funding to Harvard because they failed to address race discrimination by the government's own standards. Now, our next guest is not here to defend Harvard. Absolutely no fan of Harvard. None of us should think that Harvard is a great place for academic freedom and discovery. But there is a case to be made that Harvard should have academic freedom that is not governed by the government. Nick Perino is the executive vice president from FIRE. That's the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education. They're a legal organization that defends Americans whose free speech rights are violated on both sides of the political spectrum. He also hosts the So to Speak, the free speech podcast. Now, to be clear, on FIRE's own website, Harvard is last in rankings for free speech. FIRE founder Greg Lukianoff rails against Harvard in his book, The Coddling of the American Mind. I think we can all agree Harvard is a hellish echo chamber, to be sure, but the Trump administration seems to be violating their right to academic and educational freedom. Even if you hate the idea of Harvard, you should be worried about this for the repercussions it can have on us all. So, thank you, Mr. Perino, for joining us. What is your take on why we all need to defend Harvard, whether we like them or not?
Yeah, well, you're totally right. They've been at the bottom of FIRE's college free speech rankings for the past couple of years. We've had our fights with Harvard going back decades now. But you don't solve censorship with more censorship, and that's what we're seeing here. You see the Trump administration coming in and trying to essentially federalize or nationalize the university, requiring viewpoint diversity within the university through these sort of audits of faculty and students, these highly intrusive audits of faculty and students. They're asking the university, or I should say demanding that the university reform its governance procedures, even implementing new disciplinary procedures for students and faculty, targeting students and faculty who are involved in some of these post-October 7th protests for discipline, even if they've already been tried. So in that case, you risk double jeopardy. Harvard is a private institution. It has its own First Amendment rights. Now, people on the other side will say, well, it's the government's money, it's the government's rules. But the purse strings cannot become marionette strings. You cannot use funding to take away someone else's constitutional rights. And that's what we're seeing have happen here. So it's a violation of the Constitution, but it's also a violation of statute. The Trump administration is alleging violations of the Civil Rights Act under Title VI, which prohibits discrimination based on race, sex, and national origin, and has been expanded to also go after anti-Semitism. And there are statutory requirements through Title VI before you revoke federal funding. There needs to be an attempt at a voluntary resolution. There needs to be a hearing. There needs to be evidence introduced. There needs to be notice to Congress. And even after all that has happened, you cannot revoke funding until 30 days after which that process has ended. The federal government did none of that here. It essentially said verdict first, trial later, if there's going to even be a trial at all. So the administration is wrong on two counts, constitutional counts and statutory counts. And the ends don't always justify the means, even if you agree with what the administration is trying to accomplish.
Wow, you really nailed it, because I was going to say on Title VI, like, you know, is this a path down that, you know, is this a valid path for funding cuts? But you've laid it out. They've got to have a due process. They've got to see that there is a reasonable responsibility to try to solve this, but they didn't.
And there's a historical parallel here, too. For over a decade, we've been working with conservatives to go after the Obama and Biden administration's attempt to weaponize Title IX which prohibits sex discrimination in educational programs. And the Obama administration in 2011 put out a letter that gutted due process and gutted free speech protections for students and faculty on college campuses. And we never heard arguments from either side of the political spectrum that it's the government's money, the government's rules. But in this case, it seems like we're hearing that from conservatives all the time. It's like, well, we like the outcomes, and now we're going to say that federal funding can have strings attached. So for us, working on all sides of the political spectrum, we see this as very, you know, much similar to what we did in the Title IX context.
At the heart of this is constitutionally sound way of trying to go after this. Is there a constitutionally sound way for any sort of like future administrations to be able to tackle this, left or right? To be able to hold elite universities like Harvard accountable for like silencing dissent and pushing some sort of ideological, you know, orthodoxy on people?
Well, it depends. It depends what you are actually going after. If you are going after violations of Title VI and allegations of anti-Semitism, then you go through the statutorily required process. And you can't, in the process of doing so, also go after core protected speech. Now, you tend to see a conflation between unconstitutional or unlawful discriminatory harassment, which the Supreme Court has defined as conduct that is so severe, pervasive, and objectively offensive that it effectively denies the student a right to an education. You've seen the conflation of that with chants like "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free," as if this one chant is a form of unlawful harassment. And that's not the case. You've also seen the administration demand that colleges implement the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism, which includes a list of, I think, something like 11 different arguments that someone can make that could be anti-Semitic that include criticisms of Israel. So we've seen a lot of conflation there. And you also have President Trump, who will put out truth posts that say that Harvard has leftist bird brain professors, woke professors on its staff. We might agree with that argument, right? But that's different than a Title VI complaint. So if you're just going after our university because you don't like its faculty, well, that raises First Amendment concerns. If you're going after a university because of unlawful discrimination, that is something the administration can do if it follows the proper process and doesn't target viewpoint or constitutionally protected speech in that process.
Now, one thing FIRE constantly makes the distinction about when they announce their side on any given issue is there is already a law for crime. So if you disrupt a classroom, if you hold people hostage, if you are assaulting people, it really doesn't matter what your nationality is or which group you're protesting for or against. And so they could... Is it because there's just not enough crime here? It's thought crime that they are sort of taking this and running with it?
Yeah, well, I think what some people would allege is, okay, you have building occupations, you have vandalism, for example. These are crimes that can be punishable. But colleges and universities over the past 2 years haven't always actually attempted to punish that crime. And, you know, for example, at Columbia or at Harvard, for example, and that the lack of punishment of these crimes could itself be a violation of Title VI if you are not taking the same approach with other speakers, for example. This makes me recall a situation that happened here in Washington, D.C., where I'm based, where during the Black Lives Matter movement, you had Black Lives Matter chalked across a main thoroughfare here in Washington, D.C. Later, I think it was something like a year later, you had another black group chalk Black Unborn Lives Matter. This is a black pro-life group. And that group who chalked Black Unborn Lives Matter was prosecuted for graffiti, whereas the Black Lives Matter group was not. And so you can have a unequal application of the laws that itself can be discriminatory. And so if they're not punishing the vandalism in the same way they would for another sort of speaker, then that itself can be a form of discrimination prohibited by Title VI.
But that's not what the Trump administration's going after, clearly.
No, it's not.
It's not about that, where they could. Yeah, right.
No, they definitely could. But what we have here is an administration going after faculty and students at these universities who, as President Trump had said, he thinks are bird brains or woke or leftist faculty that he doesn't like. And so we need to stick to the law, because if we don't stick to the law, these same tools and these same abuses can be weaponized by people who we might not agree with to go after different sorts of speakers, IDF speakers on campus, for example. So the boot will eventually be on the other foot, and we need to. That's why we need to follow the Constitution and the law in any given case.
Imagine that. And then you, like last week, you had Congress trying to literally pass a bill in the House of Representatives to ban speech that's critical of Israel. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, the madness. Fortunately, that bill got pulled after there was outrage about it. But who, you know, what members of Congress even thought that was a good idea? We live in the United States of America. You're not allowed
that's
to
come
do
up,
this.
That bill, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, has come up quite a few times in Congress. Fortunately, we've been able to defeat it. But there, in no area of discrimination law do we actually define arguments and viewpoints that are unlawful. We define harassment as conduct, severe, pervasive, and objectively offensive, but not arguments and viewpoints. This would be the first time, to my knowledge, in the history of the United States, where we actually define a viewpoint as being unlawful under law. And so that's why I think it's wrong under the First Amendment. And even if it did pass into law, it would be very quickly challenged and dispensed with by the courts.
Well, thank you for what you guys are doing, because I think we're in danger, very dangerous territory here in the United States right now. And, you know, I think on Tucker's show just the other day, he was talking with, about this sort of frontier that we're facing now, where they're going to try to shut it all down. You know, you say something nasty on X, the thought police are coming for you in the United States. Like, this could be the thing that we're facing next. And I think so. Thank you for what you guys do, because, you know, it's just really disheartening to see all these conservatives who are just jumping all over this and supporting this. Really, it's really disheartening.
Well, look at us, though. We can defend people we don't like. Again, if you look at Harvard's rankings on the FIRE website, we have a freshman in high school. So I'm constantly looking at those college rankings and I'm like, nope, you're not applying there. You're not applying there. I mean, they suck, right? But they have the right to suck. We have to sit here and advocate for their rights to be terrible and for them to continue to do that if they so choose. So thank you so
much.
Vote
with your feet.
Green.
Go to a different college if you don't like what they have to say. But we need to stand up for First Amendment rights, even for people who we disagree with. As Jon Stewart, the comedian, once said, if you don't stand on principle when those principles are challenged, they're not principles, they're hobbies. And I don't think we should be free speech hobbyists. I think we should stand on principle and defend the rights of everyone, regardless of their view.
Love it.
Yeah, across the board. One standard across the board. And Dave Smith is who I was thinking of, who was just on Tucker. That was a great discussion. Nico, great to see you. Thank you so much for what you guys do. How can people support what you guys do at FIRE, by the way?
Yeah, our website is thefire.org. We have a membership program, Become a FIRE Member. But more broadly, stand up for the rights of people that you disagree with. There's a great tradition here in America of standing up for dissenters, for oddballs, for people who are at the margins of society, because we know that when those rights get eroded at the margins, it very quickly moves to the center. And we ourselves become vulnerable to government censorship and other abridgments of our freedom. So I would urge people to just stand up and speak out, not just when their side is targeted, but when even their ideological opponents or enemies maybe are targeted as well.
You can learn something from John Adams.
Thank you so much.
Boston
and
Massacre.
Again, I was excited because we've never had someone from FIRE before, but I follow you religiously. I read all their books of your founders and things, that I got nervous and said your name wrong three times. I apologize.
I'm
please come back
about
anyway.
Those sorts of things.
Okay.
Nico,
I got excited.
My name is Nicholas. Nico comes from some soap opera, some character in a soap opera that my aunt watched when she was babysitting me. So now I'm named after a soap opera character, if that matters. But I'm not precious about it. Nico, it all works for me.
Thank you.
Well, as the world turns. Nico, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And we'll see you real soon, hopefully. Great
Thanks
to have him on. All right, coming up here on the show, we are going to talk with Tara Rodas, because she's an HHS whistleblower. She told Congress, she told the Biden administration about the horrors that she was watching unfolding with the sailing and trafficking of children in the United States. It was all being done under the watchful eye of our U.S. government. Did the Biden administration do anything about it? Of course not. Now we know who's trying to protect these investigators from actually doing their job and finding these children. Could it have anything to do with George Soros and these NGOs, these Soros-linked groups trying to stop Trump's migrant child trafficking crackdown? We're going to talk with Tara in just a second here, but first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Bunker, because the internet is a jungle. All of us should be wary all the time to be a victim of cybercrime, because then there's no police to call. What do you do when you get victimized by a cyber criminal, a scammer, surveillance, government, AI? I know I'm paranoid about it. Anytime there's a lag on my computer, I'm like, it's spyware. They're watching us, but you just never know. That's why it's great to have Bunker on your side. It's the number one app for privacy, security, and peace of mind. It was built by experts with over 25 years of experience in catching criminals and fighting cybercrime. Bunker was created to protect families and friends, and now it's available to you. It's a private messenger to share messages, photos, and files with trusted contacts, free from surveillance. Also, there's a password manager to make sure that your family has access to any of your online accounts that they might need. They check your social media. You can share streaming passwords. It is really a vault to secure personally your financial information, your IDs, your tax documents. It's the app that delivers supercharged privacy and security. It is really a true family bunker for just your family, letting you store, share, and communicate freely with those you trust. So download Bunker from the App Store, Play Store, or go to bunker.life. It's B-U-N-K-R. If you use the code REDACTED, you'll get your first 3 months for free. So one more time, that's Bunker, B-U-N-K-R. .life. Use the code REDACTED and get 3 months for free. Check them out. Bunker.life today.
Well, our next guest, I would say, is really an American hero. Tara Rodas is a federal whistleblower who exposed government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded. I'm going to say that again because it just makes my skin. It makes me want to cry, actually. It's so disgusting. Tara Rodas is a federal whistleblower who exposed the Biden administration's government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded child trafficking under HHS, under the Department of Homeland Security and HHS. And these unaccompanied children, their unaccompanied children program and funneling these children off to be sold into sex slavery and then ultimately killed. Well, now we know that George Soros-linked NGOs are suing to stop the Trump administration from cracking down on this child trafficking crackdown. They're going after trying to stop it, and George Soros-backed NGOs are stepping in the way. And Tara Rodas joins us now. Tara, great to see you again. Welcome back to the show. You know, I always bring up your name because it's just so infuriating to me that you would stand up in front of Congress, you would blow the whistle on what the Biden administration was doing to traffic these children around the country, and they did absolutely nothing. Now take that a step further, and now they're actually trying to sue, not even doing nothing, but trying to sue, preventing the Trump administration from trying to find these children. What say you?
Yeah, well, first, Clayton and Natalie, thank you so much for continuing to shine a light on this crisis of these children, because we aim to stop crimes against children. So thank you so much for continuing to air this story. And it is absolutely appalling that they are now trying to stop these crimes that are being committed against children, and trying to stop the Trump administration from deporting MS-13 gang members and other members of transnational criminal organizations who we know began exploiting this system in early 2021. And I have to give credit to the very first person to crash the door, which was DHS whistleblower Aaron Stevenson. He began to notice a pattern in February of 2021. That members of the transnational organized crime watch list, so the TOC watch list, were beginning to sponsor children. So Aaron revealed that we had a national security threat in that we were allowing these criminals into our country, MS-13, 18th Street Gang, and other crime syndicates. And then worse, we're handing them off, right? We're allowing children to be handed off to them. So as I testified before Congress, this system was being exploited, and it became a white glove delivery service of children to gang members and cartels. It's unthinkable. And now that they're trying to stop the crackdown of the new administration, it just shows you what they're really thinking. They don't care about the children. They don't care about the safety of Americans. They have become really supportive of MS-13 and other gangs. It's quite shocking.
Now, today is the four-year anniversary of when you testified to Congress. And what you said in essentially is, look, we're getting paperwork for children, and then I don't know where they go. And I can't verify that they're going anywhere safe. And I see them going with kind of ne'er-do-wells, and I have no way to check up on that. And this is the problem. 3 years later, because it's been about a year now since the Biden administration admitted we don't know where 300,000 kids are. They could have, if they'd listened to you 4 years ago. So in between 4 years ago and last year, they went ahead and lost these children and decided not to listen to you. That's incredibly frustrating for me. How must it feel for you?
Well, Natalie, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, for your audience, I mean, if I'm being transparent, I have cried a lot of tears, and I'm not ashamed to say that. You know, I have looked into the face of frightened children. I've looked into the eyes of children who can't even speak Spanish. We are bringing indigenous children from Guatemala here, and they speak Mayan dialects like Quiche and Quechí. These children become a captive victim population. They have no access to law enforcement. They don't know their rights, and they are captives of criminal organizations. This is heartbreaking. And the fact that Aaron revealed this in February of 21, that it's right. Just, it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. The failure of the Biden administration when it comes to the safety and security of our nation, as well as the safety and the security of children. It's an absolute just horror. I mean, it has been heartbreaking.
And I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine what you've been through looking at these children and blowing the whistle on this. And the Biden administration did nothing to stop it. We see it from afar, you know, as journalists here on this show. And we speak to Aaron, we speak to you. And for many people, it's hard for them to even wrap their heads around this sick and sadistic world that these like pedophile elites are like running this operation. And it's all being facilitated by Alejandro Mayorkas and all of these billionaire-funded NGOs. It's all just so disgusting. So now that's the past. They've done this. They're out of here. Now Trump is in charge. Kyle Serafin, friend of the show, former FBI whistleblower, yesterday saying that he didn't feel that there was enough being done inside the administration from an FBI level to go after and find these children. Then you had the FBI, Kash Patel, coming out, I think today or late last night, saying that's one of our top priorities is to go after and find these children. So that message, I think, is getting through that Americans are fed up. I see so many people in the chat room right now. They're like, where's the FBI? Like, where's Bongino? Where's Kash Patel? Where's the Trump administration on this point? So that's the past. Do you think the Trump administration is now doing enough to try to find these children? Or are they being roadblocked by George Soros-funded NGOs? I feel like they could go around them. Tom Homan could give them the middle finger, go around these people, and go find these children.
Yeah. Well, the great news is that they have begun going after, right, criminals who they know who have the kids, and they have been recovering children. So Stephen Miller discussed, you know, a very horrific story of this one young girl who was sponsored by someone claiming to be her family member. And of course, these are the same cases that we were putting forward. The kids were telling us they didn't know who they were going to. So the administration can say whatever they want. We were looking into the faces of the children, and the children were saying they didn't know. So I know they're starting to go after, and they are recovering children. Here is the challenge, and this is why we need whistleblowers back. Garrett O'Boyle, Steve Friend, Aaron Stevenson, right? We need people because the data, this is going to require a whole of government approach. So when they are looking at one database, they're able to get some information. And the reason why, as Homeland Security Investigations is only able about to find, they're saying about 5% of the children that they go after, it's because they're relying on just the release information from HHS. But there's a whole lot of other information at DHS, at DOJ, and also other information at HHS that unless you work there and were hands-on with the data, that you may not know. So right now, all the information is siloed. They haven't been sharing the information until now. And I think they just need some more people who work these sorts of crimes and intelligence experts like Aaron, who saw the pattern and can connect the dots. So it's going to be a whole of government approach, looking at the data, and we can find not just the children, but the traffickers. And so this is something that I think that hasn't been done before, is taking an approach of targeting the trafficker themselves, because we know that the kids are being moved by these networks. So not to reveal tradecraft, but they can target in interesting ways the trafficker to find their products. And I think that's what people need to understand. And this was really shocking for me to learn that people view children as a money-making business, right? Yeah. That's what these gangs and cartels are about. They made money in drugs. They made money in guns. But they sell that one time. Once they have the child in their possession, they get to sell the child over and over again, every day, every week, every month, until these children are spent. And this is what's unacceptable. It's more lucrative for these predators and these bad guys to sell these children over and over again than to sell their drugs and guns. And so we've got to rescue these kids. We must save these children.
What do you think that looks like? I'm able to sort of see it as a group. I know they do this, groups of children. But if you find one, an incredibly damaged child, is there any way to find their family? Is there any way to rehabilitate that? Do we have the resources, or is there a group of people who do that? What is the hope in finding a child like this?
Yeah, well, Natalie, that's such a great question. And I hope people will go watch the Sean Ryan show from yesterday with Tim Tebow. So Tim Tebow's organization, Yaku Buyan's, his ministry, they have been doing this. Yes, these children can be rehabilitated. They need care, but they need trauma-informed care. So we need to not just rescue these children, but we need to care for them. Going through something this horrific requires a special type of ministry. And Yako, I know, has been on Capitol Hill. He's been at the White House. He's been posting from there. And his ministry has done such incredible things. And like I said, Tim Tebow yesterday on Sean Ryan, I think if people missed it, they should absolutely go watch it, because it gives a glimpse into this dark world of these crimes against children. And some of the children, I think people just can't fathom that some of these children are infants. They're toddlers. Yeah. These are defenseless children, and predators love to destroy the innocence of these children. And we're the only ones standing in the gap. And so we need people to make some noise, get loud, and stand up against Soros and all of his people who are trying to prevent the president of the United States from securing our border, from deporting like high-level criminal actors and gang members, and saving these kids. It's unthinkable. I couldn't believe it when I saw the Breitbart story. I'm like, they're actively working to protect gang members and put children with predators. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I say it so often here, but I think maybe just repeating it enough times, people will, you know, start to wake up about it. I think people, they can hear about illegal immigration, and they can, you know, they can go and vote, and they hear about that. They know about egg prices. That's upsetting. Gas prices, you know, all of that. But you're taking infants, you're taking babies, and you're shipping them off to these pedophile elites who are using them in sex slavery and discarding these children. Like, I know it's hard to hear, but people need to wake up and pay attention to it and stop this, as the United States of America is one of the largest purveyors of this in the world. And it's happening with U.S. taxpayer dollars. Like, we get upset about Doge things that they found, like circumcision classes in Ghana. Your money is being used for this through these NGOs. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. But I am heartened. At least I'm a glass half full kind of person. I'm heartened to hear what you're saying, which is that they have now been rounding up these people, rounding up some of these people. I know there was a big sting operation. They caught like 200 of them, which is great, about a week and a half ago. So my hope is that we can continue to keep the pressure on here. And I agree with you. We need people like Garrett O'Boyle back in there, Steve Friend and others who saw how this, you know, how this was all done.
Yeah, let's lean into a little revenge fantasy, shall we? In certain African countries, now they castrate child predators. What do you think of that? Maybe we should try it. But, I mean, your stories...
Get Quentin Tarantino on that
film. I don't feel like that's a bridge too far after talking to you.
Yeah, well, I think that there are people who know what penalties need to be levied against people who commit crimes against children. And I'm not an expert on the penalty side. But what I will say, it needs to be sufficient enough to deter people from doing these things. And this is absolutely unacceptable. And this is the humanitarian crisis of our day. And that it is these crimes against children. And it's getting more and more and more. The problem is not getting less. The problem is growing. And people need to understand how to protect their children. Because it's not just the physical possession of the child, which they get, but sometimes it's also sextortion through their phones. There's all kinds of things. And so I would encourage people to get in the fight and to understand how to protect their own families, how to protect their neighborhoods, and how to see potential trafficking situations. And if you don't mind giving me, I would love to give a plug to America's Future, americasfuture.net. We'll be traveling to Pennsylvania. We have a free event June 7. If people want to get in the fight, if they want to understand how to protect their own children against grooming, against sextortion, and then learn how to identify trafficking indicators, not so that they can intervene themselves, but so that they can say, oh, this could be an issue. I'm going to take a photograph. I'm going to then send that to my local law enforcement to let them follow up. How can they get involved with their local law enforcement? We're going to teach people how to do that. We want people to be able to protect children against predators. And so we're coming to Pennsylvania. We'd love to see people there.
Oh, well, that was a gracious answer because I was going straight to the wood chipper. But
well, so many people in our chat room are like, no, castration's not enough. We need a wood chipper.
Yeah.
Tara, can you please tell me in Pennsylvania the date, time, and website if people want to come and see you? And I think Laura Logan's going to be with you as well, right? Is that
absolutely. Yes. General Flynn will be there. Mary Flynn will be there. It's going to be a fabulous time. It is americasfuture.net, americasfuture.net, and we will be there. It's just outside of Pittsburgh on Saturday, June 7, and it's a free event. It's a free event. And so we want to equip people to understand this fight. They have to be aware. You can't solve a problem that you don't know exists. So we want people to be aware, and we need them to know how to then combat what they're seeing once they become aware. So we want people to be able to protect their families, protect their children, and that's what we aim to do at americasfuture.net.
americasfuture.net. Guys, go there. Everyone watching right now, bookmark that. Go to the website. Help out. Get the word out. If you're in Pennsylvania, come meet Tara. Come meet Laura. Come meet General Flynn. I think this is one of the most important fights in the United States right now. That's why we continue to cover this story and will not stop until none of these children, you know, are grabbed off the streets or sold off into sex slavery again. So, Tara, great to see you. Thank you so much for everything you've been doing in this. We really appreciate it.
Well, Clayton and Natalie, thank you so much for continuing to shine a light on this very important topic. So thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. And I hope to, you know, get to be with you in a couple of months with some more great news.
Oh, I'd hope so. Yes, that's the goal here. We'll be able to spread some good news in this. Tara, great to see you. Good luck in Pennsylvania. And thank you so much again for being here. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you. God bless.
Always a pleasure to talk to her because you can You can see what that must have been like to sit in that job and have these papers and see the kids and say, this doesn't make sense. And then they just slip out from under your gaze and you have no idea where they are and you know that they're not safe. And it really adds a human element, a realness to this story. It's not just like headlines with, you know, dirty kids from the BBC or whatever.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, yeah, like to help these poor children in Africa with this because they don't have enough food to eat. No, they're, it's happening right here in the United States and your tax dollars are facilitating it. Like, just let that sink in.
Right.
Anyway, all right, we've got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about the economy because, you know, there's some really nice signs right now. Over the past 24 hours, consumer prices have plummeted on clothing, on food prices. Energy costs have really dropped significantly. That's all good, but the U.S. dollar is being dumped like a bad habit by other countries. U.S. Treasury is being dumped, even Japan getting in on the mix now. What does this mean for the future of the U.S. dollar? Will President Trump actually force a gold standard to kind of shore up the U.S. dollar? We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first...
First, we want to tell you about a supplement that you might want to look into called Armra. Armra makes a colostrum supplement that is meant to optimize your health in all ways. Better sleep, better hair, better skin. Of course, we live in an environment our biology was never designed for. EMFs, artificial light, seed oils, constant access to sugar and grain and fast carbohydrates. These modern assaults disrupt cellular signaling, negatively impacting our gut health and accelerating aging. But Armra's colostrum revives cellular signaling, bolstering our health from within to defend against everyday threats. Now, colostrum, if you've ever been a nursing mom, you know exactly what it is. It's nature's first whole food. It's what you make before your milk comes in. So it's like a pre-milk substance that is chock full of bioactive nutrients that work at the cellular level to protect your baby. When you make it, you know, this is basically giving my baby a vaccine, an antibiotic, everything they need to protect them against the world. Well, you can also continue to get this supplement if you look into Armra. You can head over to tryarmra, A-R-M-R-A, .com/redacted. And when you go there, you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, it's for strength and immunity, really fortifies your gut wall system and optimizes your microbiome, strengthens your gut wall architecture, which guards against irritants that can trigger symptoms like bloating, constipation, and the like. So check them out right now. Head on over to tryarmra.com/redacted. Again, you get 15% off your first order and try it out. See if you like it. And then you can get on a recurring plan one more time. That's tryarmra.com/redacted.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. June is Men's Mental Health Month, and every year, 6 million men suffer from depression. If you're feeling overwhelmed, the strongest thing you can do is ask for help. And BetterHelp makes it easy. Take a short online quiz and connect from home with a qualified therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Well, what is going on with this economy? You read the headlines today, seems like the economy, happy times are here again. We see prices falling from clothing to energy.
Wow.
There's also the underlying current of the U.S. dollar, which has been, you know, heading towards collapse for the past number of years. We've been covering it here on the show, the rise of the BRICS currencies. Is President Trump, is there anything he can do to stave this off? Maybe moving the U.S. dollar to a gold standard. That would send shockwaves as all of these countries tried to ditch U.S. treasuries and a big middle finger to President Trump with all of these tariffs. So what in the world is going on? Well, someone who has his finger on the pulse of all of this is Kevin DeMeritt. He's the CEO of Lear Capital. He's been knee deep in research project right now, specifically around U.S. currency and the trade war. And we want to welcome Kevin back to the show. Kevin, great to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Clayton.
No, you and I were talking just, you know, the other day, and you've been said, well, Clayton, I'm knee deep in this project. I've literally been researching all of these pieces of this trade war here and what this means for U.S. currency. So we'll get to that in a second. But I just want to read you some headlines from today, if I can. So NASDAQ jumps 20% in 24 days. Is that too fast? You know, that's one headline. Bloomberg, U.S. stocks edge higher as ebbing consumer prices buoy optimism. So people are excited that, you know, clothing prices have dropped, energy prices have dropped, food prices have dropped, egg prices have dropped, a lot of these things. U.S. Treasury shocks with second biggest surplus in history. That's a stunning headline. And then Tariffmageddon canceled. U.S. inflation stays cooler than expected. Prices up 2.3%, the smallest annual increase since Biden's 2021. So when you read these headlines, you see these numbers, stock market surging, consumers seem like they're happy again, they're ready to go out and spend some money. Seems like good stuff here, but there's like an underlying current that I think you probably have your finger on, right?
Yeah, you know, let's take two of those things that you're talking about and kind of break them down a little bit. So the budget surplus, fantastic. I'm glad we had a budget surplus. I wish we could have one every single month. But the budget surplus in April, if you're ever going to have a budget surplus, it probably is going to be in April because we all send in our tax payments, the quarterlies for corporations and so on and so forth. So there should be a surplus in April every single year. There isn't. And now that there is one, everybody's shocked. However, if you look at the deficit, in the first 4 months, fiscal 4 months of the year, which isn't the first 4 months of this year, the fiscal year for the government is a little bit different. It was $840 billion deficit. In the first 7 months, it was over $1 trillion. And just the interest payments on the debt of $35 trillion is $1 trillion a year, which is higher than all of the defense spending put together. So it's nice that we have a budget. Look, I love it. And part of it came because of these tariffs, and part of it came because we all send in our tax checks to the IRS. But that doesn't mean this is going to continue. I'd be shocked if it did, because there's a lot of work to be done to try to figure out how to get this to a balanced budget. Secondly, when you're looking at clothing and eggs and everything else starting to fall off, I would have expected this to happen, because the definition of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. And so people say that, but they don't break it down. So when you say too much money, you can think of that too much money was all the money that was printed in COVID, right? So you had this COVID situation, everybody got some free money, businesses got free money. And so you have too much money chasing too few goods. The too few goods part was also part of COVID, because you had a supply chain problem. You just couldn't get products from all around the world. People in the United States couldn't go to work. So you had supply chain problems. So you had too few goods. The one that people don't get is the chasing part. And chasing in economics is really called velocity. It's the velocity of money. The velocity of money is how many times does a dollar change hands over the course of a year? And that's important, because if there's no confidence or little confidence in the economy, or little confidence that you're going to continue to make money or you're going to have a job, that's going to start falling off a little bit. How good do we feel about the economy and how fast is the economy growing? You feel a little bit better, you're going to go spend a dollar a little bit quicker. That velocity is slowing down. You can see it in the numbers. So The government has the velocity number. You look at it. And let's say it moved from 7 to 6, it's a big drop. If it goes to 5, you're probably in a recession. So you're starting to see people getting a little bit less confident about where the economy is going, maybe where the stock market is very high right now. Maybe they're not, you know, spending as much money there. There's a lot of money in cash sitting on the sidelines. We need that velocity back if prices are going to stay high. If it stays lower, then the prices are going to continue to come down.
I haven't heard anyone talking about that. I mean, this is important. So we can talk about, oh, stock market surging. The Trump administration can say, look, egg prices are down. All of this doesn't mean much if people are not trading those dollars. And so the velocity has dropped. The chasing has dropped. I haven't heard anyone Correct. Really talking about that. It's a really important point. So And I know President Trump recently has sort of hinted that things might get worse. Things might get bad. So what is he seeing specifically? Is it the velocity number? Is he also seeing the fact that all of these countries are trying to dump the U.S. dollar, China getting rid of U.S. treasuries, trying to dump it? Would this push President Trump to say, hey, maybe it's time we put the U.S. dollar back on a gold standard? There's been a lot of rumors about that at the beginning of the Trump administration, Fort Knox, trying to make sure we have a good accounting of the gold that we have in the United States. But if all these BRICS countries are going to ditch the U.S. dollar and they're buying up gold, we're going to be screwed.
Yeah, I think what he was trying to refer to is the you've got a situation right now where the U.S. dollar is down 27% since 2000. If you just calculated inflation for each year, your dollar has fallen by 27%. That's painful for everybody. At the same time, on an international basis, a lot of central banks have been selling U.S. dollars and then purchasing gold. So that's why you've seen central bank purchases of gold at record highs. This will be the fourth year in a row if it continues, and it has. And they've liquidated U.S. treasuries. What can we do to stop that? There has to be some confidence built back into the dollar. But what the previous administrations have done is weaponize the dollar. Russia, China, all over the globe, we've weaponized the dollar to try to control countries and even companies. If, for instance, in Iran, if you were a private company or a public company doing business, we might kick you out of the SWIFT banking system and weaponize the dollar to do things like that. And people are like,
yeah, we've been a bully. All through Africa. I mean, we've been a bully with the U.S. dollar. I mean, it's not surprising the chickens are coming home to roost, right?
Yeah. So you're just getting this enormous amount of liquidation. There was an article in Forbes magazine talking about China, Korea, and Taiwan holding $2.5 trillion of our treasuries. That used to be $4 trillion. Now it's $2.5 trillion. It continues to fall. And if they liquidated it all at once because they were just annoyed with these tariffs, it would have major repercussions. That would be inflationary because you're back to the too much money. All that money would come back to the United States. You have too much money chasing too few goods. Dollar would fall. Everything would go back up in price. So President Trump is saying, hey, how can we combat this? And one of the things that he was talking about and you referenced was, hey, this gold in Fort Knox, if it's really there, can we use it to back a little bit of the dollar? Because if you do that, then you can't print money willy-nilly without backing it by whatever percentage that you have backed it by gold. Now, why do we know this works? Because when we weaponized the dollar against Russia, Russia's ruble immediately fell. President Putin came out and said, hey, look, we're going to back a little bit of it by gold. It jumped right back up 20% almost immediately. Another great example would be BRICS. The BRICS countries have said that they wanted to back that currency by either commodities and a little bit of gold. And if that happened, that would strengthen that currency against ours. And it would just be a great play on their part, because not only have they been purchasing a lot of gold to potentially do this, but our dollar would just fall off a cliff if we didn't do the same, right? So I believe that he's thinking about it the right way, that if we got ahead of this and we could back the U.S. dollar by gold, that would strengthen our dollar. We would continue to have the world's reserve currency and all the benefits that come from that.
You know, as you and I were talking the other day about this and all the research you've been diving into, is that really these trade wars are a currency war. And, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but at the end of the day, that's really what it is, right? We hear about tariffs, we hear about the trade wars with the UK, with China, with whatever, but it really comes down to the US dollar as a currency, and that's really where the war is. Can you explain that?
Yeah. And this is where I think the conflict is with President Trump and Jerome Powell. It's not just that Jerome Powell believes that inflation is going to go back up. If we got him behind closed doors and he really looked at the velocity of money, looked at all these other situations, he would say, yes, inflation is coming down. The problem I have is how much of an inflation effect are we going to have from the 10%, 15%, 20% tariffs? and trade wars turn into currency wars. If you look at history, when people say there's a trade war going on, the most of the people that I speak to say the trade war is I put 10% tariffs on you, you put 10% or 15% tariffs on me, I get ticked off, I put another 10%, and we have this tariff war going back and forth. That's not typically what happens. Typically what happens is that happens, and about 6 to 9 months later, those countries say, how do I benefit from lowering my currency to sell as many goods as I used to the United States? So if you think about country A being the United States, putting tariffs on country B, which would be China, of 10%. And China says, okay, I'm going to put tariffs back on you of 10%. Now you're even again, and the United States says, well, I'm going to put 10% more back on you. Now the net is 10% to China. China says, look, I don't want to continue to play this tariff game, so I'm going to stop. What I'm going to do is lower my currency by 10% against the US dollar, and my goods in the United States are at the exact same price as they were before the 10% tariffs. So how do we know that this happens? Because if you go back into 1930, there was a tariff war called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act in 1930, which was the United States government placing tariffs on 20,000 imported goods, which really worsened the Depression. But what happened after that happened was Britain abandoned the gold standard in 1931. Why? Because they wanted to drop their dollar, and it had the effect that they wanted. It dropped their dollar by 30%, negating all of the tariffs that we had placed on all of those goods. In retaliation for that, the United States got off of, they confiscated gold in 1933 at $20 an ounce and revalued it at $35 an ounce, which dropped the dollar by 40% to retaliate for the 30% drop in that currency. FDR
made everyone hand in their gold.
Yeah, at $20 and then revalued it at $35. Hey, if you would have just held on to it, you would have picked up a 75% increase. But if you move this forward, Clayton, then in 2018 and 19, we placed a bunch of tariffs on China. Trump placed those tariffs on China. And what happened? In August of 2019, China let the yuan weaken past $7 per dollar. For the first time in over a decade. So for the first time in a decade, we put tariffs on China, and they let their currency devalue about the exact amount that we increased tariffs. If people just opened up a book and get a little educated on trade wars turn into currency wars every single time. The tariffs can keep going back and forth as many times as you'd like. Those are easy. Then somebody says, okay, I'm done. 6 months, 9 months later. Whatever's going to happen here in China with this trade situation, I would almost bet you that you're going to get a 10%, 15% decrease in the value of the yuan. They already did it in 2018 and 19, and they would do it again. And that's why people have to be concerned about the value of their currency, because everybody starts to devalue at that particular point, and you need something to protect yourself against the devaluation.
Yeah, that's why, like you and I were talking, if President Trump can move the U.S. dollar back towards a gold standard and force these countries to not be dumping the U.S. dollar, which they've been doing at a record pace, that's why you're seeing the rise of this BRICS currency, and you're seeing the plummeting of the U.S. dollar. I think that's the real story here under all of this. I think, so we can talk about egg prices, we can talk about clothing prices, energy prices, but it's really, where does the U.S. dollar sit on this global stage right now? Fascinating.
Yeah, look, the stock market's like this, teenager. It's reacting to things on a daily basis. You know, today it's down, yesterday it was up. I mean, it's had massive fluctuations for the first, 4 months of 2025. If you're going to try to play the stock market right now, almost impossible, because you don't know what's going to happen. But what are the factors that are going to drive it long term? It's going to be the debt in the United States, which Trump is trying to fix, and it's going to be the value of the dollar. Everybody's talking about the value of the dollar because you have a lot of countries out there starting to sell it we're at kind of the end of the periods that world reserve currencies typically last. So there's been seven. They typically last about 107 years. We're at 112 years for the US dollar. You're starting to get to the end of the time periods that usually, you know, those reserve currencies last. And there's a lot of reasons for these countries to be mad about, you know, how we've weaponized the US dollar. People need to understand how that affects them, how it affects our 401k, how it affects their retirement and all those kinds of things. Because if inflation's just running 4% and you try to retire, you calculate that out over the course of 20 years, it is a major impact on the value of the purchasing power of your dollar. So if Trump can fix that and he can figure out how to pull the deficit down a little bit and pull debt down a little bit, the government's going to be in much better shape. The dollar's going to be in much better shape. And then you can feel more comfortable about the long-term value of your dollars in retirement. But if you don't believe that can happen, and that's a big if, then you need to do something with your money to actually protect some of it.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, you and I, well, we see eye to eye on buying gold, buying silver, buying real estate, buying tangible assets. You know, play around in the stock market a little bit, that's fine. But to have those real tangible assets, and then gold prices, I think we had Goldman Sachs out with a report. They're predicting $4,500 an ounce for gold. Goldman Sachs?
Goldman Sachs said in a year, the price of gold could be $4,500 for all of the reasons that you and I are talking about right now. They said trade wars turn into currency wars. The U.S. dollar is already taking a hit on an international basis. And what are those central banks replacing those dollars with? Gold at a record level. Who are the biggest buyers? China, Brazil, Russia, India, you know, everybody who's part of the BRICS countries. But now you're starting to get other countries starting to sell off, like Japan. You don't really typically see Japan selling off large amounts of treasuries. You just started to see it. Again, trade wars turn to currency wars, and here's Japan selling off our dollar. So don't be surprised in 6 or 7 months to see potential recession in the United States, which would devalue the dollar even more. And that's the pain that I think President Trump is talking about. People need to learn how to protect themselves and learn about what's going on right now in the long term, not just what's happening in the short term in the stock market and what's happening with inflation.
Trump has been dropping these acorns, you know, about what he thinks is coming in the U.S. economy. So I think he knows what's about to happen with the U.S. dollar. Kevin, I think you put together a report for our audience, right, on this currency war thing. You've been working on it for the past couple of weeks. Am I right about that? I don't want to jump the gun.
Yeah, no, we're just finishing it up. Like I said, I got paper strewn all over the place. So if my thoughts were a little off, I've been trying to put this together so people can understand it and try to react to it and protect themselves, because the government is not responsible for your retirement. This isn't about fear. It's about reality. They're not there to help protect your retirement. They're going to do what they do, and people need to do what they do, and that's education. That's why I love your program. It's you educate people and people can make their decisions. So I think we've put a great report together talking about the dollar, talking about debt, what factors those two things have and influence the price of gold, why Goldman Sachs is talking about $4,500 gold, how to protect your retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs, things like that, and physical delivery for your savings outside of those retirement accounts. So that's available completely free. The report will be done tomorrow, so we can start electronically sending it out to people. So if people go to LearRedacted.com or call us at 800-613-3557, then we'll get that report out to them immediately, absolutely free of charge. And you know, all the listeners on your program also get the $500 in their account as a credit that they can use against free shipping or all of the IRA fees. So that's just something we always do on your program as well. So the free report and the credit are all going to be available for all of your listeners.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And so does the audience as well. Kevin, great to see you. Hopefully people are paying attention to this, because if President Trump's dropping these little acorn nuggets about what's coming in the economy, people better pay attention. Like, stocks can go up, stocks can go down, but people need to protect themselves. And we've been warning for years about the collapse of the U.S. dollar, and it doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. Kevin, great to see you. We appreciate your insights. This is really fascinating. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
And thanks, Kevin. No, I'm encouraged. I mean, I'm encouraged that President Trump is being honest about it. I mean, he knows he's only got 4 years and he's not coming back again. So he's not going to, you know, he's not going to put out lies about this. But he has been dropping these nuggets about some of these headwinds in the economy. And I think he knows what's happening with the U.S. dollar. One thing we didn't talk about there, I should have asked Kevin, but, you know, is about these stable coins. So with the U.S. dollar, you know, you could back it by gold. But another big push right now is by having a lot of these stable coins backed by U.S. dollars, USDC and so forth. And you've got a lot of investors who are buying up crypto. Is that another way around this problem for the U.S. dollar, not only with gold, but also with crypto? Because if the United States dollar becomes the standard stable coin backing mechanism, you know, that could ward off this U.S. dollar collapse. But it's hard to ignore. I mean, it's absolutely hard to ignore what these BRICS nations are doing right now and buying up all of this gold and dumping U.S. treasuries. You know, it's the U.S. dollar hegemony is in many ways over. So we're going to see that declining further. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us here on this Tuesday. We really appreciate it. Hey, I should mention we have our redacted store. In fact, I'm wearing one of our Silence Equals Complicity t-shirts. This was a limited special edition t-shirt. If you just go to redactedstore.com, you can see some of our other special edition t-shirts as well. We've got all sorts of mugs and hoodies over there. And hey, you know, Father's Day is coming up. Get your redacted viewer, father, or someone in your family, a redacted hoodie or a mug or a sticker or something else to support the community here. And we really do not put the prices up beyond the printing costs. We really try to keep them pretty much at cost. So, you know, what these cost to print. So it's just a little way to support the show, but we really appreciate it. Just head over to redactedstore.com. All right, everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining us here on this Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow here live at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks for subscribing, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone.